This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Own It Show. I'm Justin, and my co-host, who we typically have, is enjoying a little bit of R&R. And so I can't wait to dive in today's guest. Because when we really talk about self-development, we talk about what it is to lean into your level of ownership. We do every single show that you guys listen to, it's ownership is X, ownership is Y. There's always a definition to what ownership is, because guess what? There is no right answer. It's different for everybody. It meets everybody in a different place. It meets you where you need to hear it. And when we get truly moved by something, when we go through a journey that truly moves us and puts us in a position of needing to actually ultimately take action, it opens us up to a level of vulnerability. It opens us up to a level of, maybe I don't want to turn that corner because I don't know what's around that corner. But when we do, it transcends us into a whole different life. And today we're bringing on somebody who's really been doing this for men in a really positive way. So if you're a man out there, I know a lot of our audience, entrepreneurial men, or if you're a woman who's listening to this, maybe share it with them, a man in your life that means something to you, because it's tough as men sometimes to lean into this stuff. And more now than ever, we need to do it in a community, in a place that feels safe, in a place that feels authentic, and something that can really resonate with each and every one to make sure that we can show up in what true masculinity means, and not the stereotypical way. So without further ado, I'm really excited to introduce our guest today, Greg Scheinman, who is doing fantastic work in this space for men, and really transcending a lot of their experiences and their day-to-day life. So Greg, thank you so much for spending time with us today and really being able just to shed light and go on a journey together.
Justin, thank you so much for having me, inviting me on the program, being patient while I got us logged on over here. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Greg, I'd love you to kind of take us through your journey in what this looks like, because as somebody who is doing this for others has obviously gone through something themselves. And I'd love to kind of understand what was your awakening moment, your aha moment, through your life that led you to this truly impactful work.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I think it was a series of moments, not just one. I think it's been a series of moments throughout my entire life that has led me to where I am now and still where I want to go. And finding my calling and my purpose and what I enjoy doing in life. It's been a series of moments, none of which are along a straight line. It doesn't work like that. And to put it in context, you know, I'm 49 years old now, been married for 20 years to my wife, Kate, together for 25. We have two teenage boys, Harper, 15, Auden, 18, getting ready for college, dealing with high school right now. And when I go back, you know, from that of what got me here, when I was born and raised in New York on Long Island, had nowhere to go but down, quite frankly. We were very privileged, grew up in the North Shore of Long Island, had everything we needed. I had two younger brothers, you know, my mother and my father. We had an ideal family. And my father got sick when I was in high school, and he ultimately passed away at 47 years old. It was a pivotal moment in my personal development for my two younger brothers, of course, you know, for my mom, and it rocked us. You know, it was really the first adversity we had been faced with. So, and I was heading off to college and I lost my mentor and my best friend, and I was rudderless for a long period of time. And we kind of went in all different directions for a while. I lost my brother for years to prison. So I've dealt with death, dealt with loss of freedom. You know, when you deal with death and you deal with loss of freedom, and I came out of college thinking I wanted to be in the entertainment industry, which is, I was sounded like a good life, you know, in there, and I had no family business or anything to go into. And I went into the entertainment industry and I ended up at Miramax Films running Harvey Weinstein's office of all people for 2 years, and had the claim to fame of telling him to fuck off 20 years before the Me Too era. It never occurred to me that I could not still be successful in the film industry from there. Went on to produce a few successful feature films and realized, be careful what you wish for. You know, this was not the life that I really wanted to be in. Wasn't healthy. I had my own struggles with addiction and health and alcoholism, you know, during that time there. And, you know, later, you know, towards the tail end of that, I met my now wife in California. If you don't think that you can meet your wife at the Sky Bar of the Mondrian Hotel in Beverly Hills, California, well, apparently you can, okay, out there. So if somebody would have told me 25 years ago, you'd be married with children living in Houston, Texas, doing what you're doing now, I would have said, bet the fucking under. That is never going to happen. Mm-hmm. And here we are. Mm-hmm. So these pivotal life events, and in some way she took pity on me in my drunken stupor, falling over her at the bar. And from the time I met Kate, and our relationship went from long distance dating to moving in together, to ultimately relocating to Houston, where she was from, realizing New York wasn't the place for me in the long term, starting our family, regaining my health, my perspective on life. I was able to start a company. We had our first child, and I was able to start a company called Teen Baby Entertainment, because I was sitting at home in Houston, Texas with no friends and nothing to do. And sitting there going, I think we've got about a year's worth of runway before shit really hits the fan down here. And I'm watching ESPN and I'm watching Sesame Street, and I'm flipping back and forth like most dads do at the time. And like, why should I watch Sesame Street when I can watch sports? And back then they had picture in picture also, you know, like, you, and I had, you know, a big screen and a little screen, and I'm going, you know what? I think I can do better than this. And created a company called Teen Baby Entertainment, creating sports videos for kids so that we could raise those next generations of fans, and that the dads could actually put up with what we were putting on TV for our kids and drop our kids down in front of the screen for 30 minutes so we can breathe, you know, or do anything. And that little idea really turned into the baby Einstein of the sports world. We ended up having licenses with all of the major leagues, NFL, NBA, NASCAR, NCAA, and matching all these celebrities to their, you know, to their favorite teams. So we had a baby Longhorn video, and Matthew McConaughey was teaching your kid about the Longhorns, and Red Sox was Ben Affleck, and Regis Philbin doing Notre Dame. And this little company where I was selling DVDs out of the trunk of my car and filming these little videos in a studio by myself, you know, and trying to raise a kid of our own at the same time, took off and ultimately got acquired by Michael Eisner, who was the former chairman of Disney out there. And we were the first acquisition he made after he left Disney. And we became partners for several years. And as quickly as it rocket shipped up, and went from selling these out of the trunk of my car to Target and Best Buy and Circuit City and Toys R Us and all these places, many of which don't exist anymore. And the market changed significantly. We shot up like a rocket. And then we hit a wall, you know, and came down. So I had another pivotal moment. Identity being tied up in this business. Success, ultimately failure. Valuation plummet, you know, skyrocket and plummet. Ultimately merged the company into the Topps baseball card company, which he had acquired. And I was back to not having a job again. Certainly didn't have enough to retire. Still in Houston, Texas. Identity tied to this business. Now have a second child. More pivotal moments. But I knew how to make things. I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I knew how to make things. I knew how to produce things. I knew how to hustle. So I started a television show saying, listen, I need to talk to people. Somebody needs to tell me what to do. I need to get ideas. I need to meet some people, actually, still in Houston, Texas, because this was a national business that I was basically running almost on my own, you know, from down here. I said, you know what? People like talking about themselves. Let me bring a camera. So I started calling whoever I wanted to interview, whoever I wanted to talk to and learn from. And I said, hey, got this television show Would love to come and interview, day in the life, really learn from you, profiles, you know, what's going on. Can we do it? And people said yes. So then I went to PBS down here in Houston and I said, hey, I've got this television show and I've got all these guests that have said yes. All I need is airtime. Will you give it to me? And it was a chicken or the egg situation. And they go, you have what? You're going to give us a 30-minute talk show every single week and all these people have said yes to do it and we have to do nothing? It's like, exactly. Okay, we'll give you Thursdays at 7 p.m. Great. I started calling more people. Hey, I host this show for PBS television on Thursdays at 7 p.m. I would love to come out and interview you. Mm-hmm. Nobody said no. I started meeting all these incredible people and I started learning. And I started getting ideas and feeling like myself again. And then ultimately it struck me that I could leverage this, that these are entrepreneurs and risk takers. And what if I did something with this? And around that time, my former partners at a firm called Inns Group said, why don't you come over here and work with us? It's insurance and risk management. We have this firm. Here's our vision. We're trying to grow this thing. You talk to entrepreneurs and risk takers. We deal in risk management. This could actually be something. But guys, I don't know a fucking thing about insurance. Don't worry about that. We'll handle that. Okay. You line them up. We can help knock them down. You're a smart guy. Eventually, you know, you'll figure, you'll get this and you'll learn also. Okay. So I went out and I got, I said, I didn't commit to it. I got my licenses, took it. Did I want to do this? Talked to my wife, said everything I've ever done in my life, nobody ever needs at all. This actually has residual income. Everybody needs this. It can be, this could be actually somewhat interesting. And I did it. We created a plan for you to join, invest in the firm, hit certain measurements, ultimately became a partner in the firm. Grew it from 45 people to over to 200 people. At the end of 2020, we ended up getting acquired by a publicly traded company, and I exited out of the firm last August. And along that time, and by the way, everyone else at the firm had responsibility for all the success of the firm. I was a tiny little part of it. I'm extremely grateful and extremely lucky, but I had a great run, had a great ride over there. And I got to do what I was interested in. If you could eat it, drink it, work out with it, I could insure all of that stuff. That's what actually made it cool. This combination of personal passion and professional expertise.
That's absolutely part outstanding. Of the journey. That's absolutely outstanding. I'm just like enthralled with this because anytime you meet somebody who's gone down different roads, right? And had, you talk about these series of moments that occurred. It's like that for everybody. And so often we're waiting for like the flashing lights and God beat me over the head with a hockey stick to say, hey, this is the road you need to take. But it's really a series of moments. And when the intentionality or the level of consciousness comes up that we are able to understand those, we start to really, really appreciate it. And you said something that I want to dive back into. You said a lot of things I want to dive back into, but the first one I want to go into is you realized when you were in Hollywood that it wasn't the life that you wanted. And what was that thing? What was that feeling? What was that item that told you that, or that you were able to, that you were willing to go, hey, you know what? I need to be different, or I need to do something differently.
It's such a good question. I think right before we hit the button on this, we talked about authenticity. And I was on a call last night with 14 men as part of my Maximized Man group coaching program, and we all had to choose a word. We did a round table and choosing a word, and it was led by my buddy Paul Epstein, who's an incredible leadership speaker and coach. And he did the first one, and then I was the bookend on the other side. And ironically, to your point, my word was authenticity. I have been chasing authenticity my whole life. I was my father's son. I was Alan Scheinman's son for years in Great Neck, Long Island, and he was a legend there. I was Harvey's guy at Miramax. Then I was Eisner's guy. Then I didn't know what I was for a while as this Inns Group guy. Then I was the TV host guy. Then I was the row studio guy. I opened up a rowing studio in a gym, thinking rowing was going to be the next spinning and we were going to be the soul cycle of rowing, and failed miserably. Now I'm the midlife male. I've been chasing authenticity for 49 fucking years, trying to figure out, you know, who I am. That's where this midwife male concept even came from. It came from a day that I just started writing. I just went out in my backyard one day and started writing. And it became a blog, which became a newsletter, which became a podcast, which has now become a book, which has then become a coaching program, which has now become a keynote speaking career. And it's all been about connecting the dots. It's where my six F's concept came from, of family and fitness and finance and fashion and food and fun and all of these things that make up who I am in a very specific order. Because I think with a lot of guys, we're measuring to the wrong metric of success.
I want to stop you there because I want to stop you there because there's so much here. Chasing authenticity, your dad's son, your Harvey's guy, your Eisner's guy, you're the TV guy, you're the rowing guy. You said later on that when you had lost your job again, your identity was tied to it. You said that you didn't know how you'd ever get over this. You didn't know how you continually had to reinvent yourself because you were tying it to who you, what you did rather than who you were. And right. rather than putting who you were into every other entity, you were altering yourself to become a part of whatever ecosystem you were in. And the six F's that you talk about, all of a sudden for the first time, if I can say that, you maybe have found what's important to you, what matters to you, who you are, and are living in alignment with that and making the environment consume you.
Well said. Spot on. And I can say with authenticity and 100% certainty now that I am living my message. And I don't believe I was ever really able to say that before. I was successful by society's metrics of success from the outside looking in. Career success, beautiful family, looking like I'm in pretty good shape, seemingly happy, you know, a couple of kids in private school, nice house, take a few vacations every year, you know, wearing the nice watch, dressing, I mean, by all measures, successful, but also incredibly unfulfilled and out of balance.
It's funny you say that.
In alignment and not operating with intention and purpose and authenticity.
I love that because I always, again, the listeners out there, they've heard this before, but it's, I always say my time in the National Hockey League was my ultimate failure. It was true success without fulfillment. You got to that top of that mountain that everybody's like, man, this is amazing. This is incredible. And you're literally sitting there empty inside every day.
Let me tell you what's important. And it's, I mean, you say National Hockey League. I go back to 1980, New York Islanders, Philadelphia Flyers, Bobby Nystrom, overtime goal over Pelle Lindbergh's shoulder. Okay, there with my dad. That's authenticity. That's real wealth. That's life moments. That's what's important. Knowing what's important is most important. And we can acquire more things, but experiences, that's what the stuff that really matters. You go back to these moments, the choices, the decisions, the positive action steps that you take. These series of moments that get you to where you are. The over-indexing traps that guys fall into that we work so hard right now to pull them out of. You know, the definition of success being salary, job, title, typically. As opposed to this holistic approach, you know, of true wellness. I have this thing, I'm still working on it right now. You know, you look at wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, you know, wealthy. And people define wealthy in term, you know, in monetary, financial, kind of quantitative measurement. What if we looked at wealth like W-E-L-L? You know, what if we looked at real wellness? What if we looked at real wealth? And what are the pieces that make that up? The moments, the memories, the actions you're taking. You know, that's the stuff that fascinates me. That's the stuff that I think is really interesting for men, you know, right now. Guys that I'm seeing in their 30s that are looking ahead to their 40s and 50s and are maybe scared shitless of it, you know, and how it's going to be. Guys that are right smack in the middle of it. You know, midlife is synonymous with crisis. How do we get guys to see that through a different lens? How do we get them to see the middle as the sweet spot, as the beginning of the next and best phase of their life? Use all these experiences, all this learning, all these ups and downs to catapult us into total life wellness. How do we change our mindset on that? And I got guys coming out of the midlife crisis too that are like, hey man, finance ain't my problem. That's not the F that I'm worried about. Because I crushed it, I over-indexed at work, and guess what? Now I got to fix my family, I got to fix my fitness. I realized I'm not having any fun, really? What was it all for?
I want to, guys, listeners, I want you to go back to what he just said, because it may have skipped over top. Wealth, typically spelled W-E-A-L-T-H, versus changing script and looking at it is W-E-L-L-T-H as wealth, real total life wellness. What does that look like, especially as a man, especially in this world that is so convoluted and so just conflicted when it comes to what true masculinity is and how do we lead as men? And I'm curious, Greg, kind of diving in, what does total life wellness look like?
Yeah, again, it's a great question. One, I think it looks different for all of us. Mm-hmm. And that's really the cool thing about it is we get to define it. We get to write our own script. We get to live our own message. Mm-hmm. I write a lot and I end a lot of things that I write with be you, you know? Be yours, and that's extremely hard for men.
Just like we say, own your different.
Yeah. You listen, phrase it any way you want, you know, own it, transformation, be yourself, live your message, maximize your life. You know, but what it really also comes down to is what do you want to do about it? How do you want to live? We talk a lot, hear a lot about why, hear a lot about purpose. Okay. I like to dive more into the how. And then it comes down to, are you going to fucking do it or are you not? It's pretty simple. But as we all know, simple is hard. Simple is really, really hard. Do simple better. That's really hard because we tend to default to work also as men. We have open space. What do? We default to work. I should take another meeting. I should take another call. I should text another guy. So it's hard when you ask what total life wellness is to me. To me, it's having the ability to do what you want, when you want, with who you want. Having that kind of freedom. But also having a plan. If you don't know where you're going, you're never going to get there. Like I've got a very specific maximized action plan. 3-year, 5-year maximized action plan. And then I reverse engineer back to that. Aggregate, curate, eliminate what I want in my life. What are my non-negotiables? I exercise. It's like if we go in order, my family always comes first. Everything with my family goes on the calendar first. Sporting events, days that I take my son for donuts or kolaches in the morning, dinners, weekends that we get to travel. Now we get to go visit colleges. All of my family's date nights with my wife, you know, my family stuff goes on the calendar first. Same thing, guys. You run your calendar. Your calendar shouldn't run you. Put the shit that's important to you on the calendar first. Then find the time for the quote unquote obligations. You're going to realize really fast how many quote unquote obligations are not really obligations. You're back to choices and decisions and how you time block and how you maximize your time and control what you can control. My family comes first. Everything goes on the calendar. We got a running joke in our house. If it's not on the calendar, it doesn't exist. And we all have access to it. And at this stage, listen, I can tell you with two teenage boys, they're buried in their fucking phones. So trust me, they can see a calendar. Okay, they can look down and see the calendar also. You want TikTok, you want Instagram, you want Snapchat, you want all that, use a calendar. Awesome.
Prerequisite.
Prerequisite, yes. Okay. I'm still paying those bills. So here's the trade-off. Get all those things that you want. All you got to do is use a calendar. Okay. Because I don't want to miss your game. That time is too valuable, you know, to me. The fun stuff and the good stuff goes on the calendar first. Events you're looking forward to, concerts you want to go see, vacations you're going to take. I do 3 to 4 events and experiences a year. I try to do one per quarter. I put them on the calendar. I pay for them in advance. By the way, now I know how much money I have to earn. Go pay myself back for those things. And then I back into fitness. Then at my workouts go on the calendar. It's important to me. I'll work out 300 days this year. I'll take 65 days off. Okay, I already know it. It's quantifiable. Fridays, I box. It's not on the calendar one weekend. It's on repeat. So my fitness and health goes on the calendar. My food, in a way, nutrition goes on the calendar. Where I eat breakfast, where I eat lunch, where I eat dinner. My meals may change. The stuff may change in there. So when you actually live by design, it may seem complicated, but the reality is it's very simple. It's very automated. And there's a lot of flexibility actually in there. But what there also is there's structure. There's structure and there's consistency and there's discipline. And what that does for a guy with stress and anxiety like I have, that reduces stress and anxiety. Because I can see it. I know it's coming. I can look around the bend. I can prepare for it.
And what did you have to do from a personal side in development to be able to lean into this type of mindset? Because this is not something that comes easy to everybody. It's not something that is natural. It's not something that it's not the norm of how people live. And I think the more that we get exposed to this type of thing, the more we realize, oh my goodness, there's a lot of development work here. And I'm going to just speak especially for men, it can be unarming. It can be something that makes you feel I'm not good enough. I don't know it well enough. And I tweeted this morning, I said, be willing to look foolish the more we are willing to be uncomfortable for a short period of time, the greater our realization of improved performance will happen. Basically, be willing to hate to be bad at things, but be willing to look like a beginner. And when you're able to do that, you lean into this whole new transcended position. And so I'm curious for you, how did this mindset shift? What was that like for you?
Yeah, again, you ask great questions. I started to be more forgiving of myself. If I can do this, first and foremost, if I can do this, anybody can do this. I was the guy that was resistant to coaching, that thought he had all the answers, that thought he could go it alone, didn't need to be part necessarily of the community. Was the type A entrepreneur, leader, rebel, even when I was in a company, you know, with other people, all them, chip on his shoulder, all of those things. So if I can do this, anybody can do this. And again, there wasn't one specific moment. There wasn't one tipping point, you know, eureka light bulb thing. And all of a sudden, you know, I saw the light. It was a series. It was a series of things where I just got up and I looked in the mirror over and over again each day. And I was not liking what I saw. It wasn't working. So things had to change. So I started to, you know, I don't know how your eyes are. My eyes aren't very good. But when you go to the eye doctor and they put the lenses over your eyes and they go better one or better two, you know, better one or better two until finally it comes into focus. I just started playing this little game with myself. Better one or better two, better one or better two. Hey, guess what? Things aren't working. It's opposite day. Do the opposite of what you've been doing. And maybe things like, try that. Because hey, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So if what I was doing wasn't working, wasn't helping my relationship with my wife, wasn't making me a better father, wasn't making me better, you know, better money, wasn't making me feel better, my performance was dropping in every one of those areas. And nobody else knew it except for me. Or at least let me rephrase that. I didn't think anybody else knew it except for me. The reality is I think everybody knew it and could see it. I was angry. I was stressed. I was a dick. I wasn't showing up well really anywhere. And that was compounding, like any interest. It just compounds over time, good or bad. And I started to change. I started to ask myself, better one or better two? What would happen if I woke up an hour earlier? What would happen if I didn't respond to that text immediately and come off like a dick? What would happen if I took the 24-hour rule and actually used it before I answered that email? What would happen if I actually went after clients that I liked instead of chasing dollars? What would happen if I dressed a little bit differently? Felt a little bit, and I just started doing it. Here's the other thing. There's no perfect time to start. Just start one thing at a time. I just started doing it. And guess what happened? Started to see some different results. People started to react to me a little bit differently. Started asking me what I was doing differently. What was going on? And then I got a coach. And it helped. And then I got a trainer. And even though I had 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, of fitness background, somebody that knew more than me, somebody that could help me. Got a nutritionist. I know a shit ton about nutrition. Still, somebody to talk to, somebody that knew more, somebody to hold me accountable in each one of these areas so that I could show up better in each one of these areas. And all of a sudden, guess what? The guy who thought he could do it all alone and had it all covered couldn't do it alone. Did it so much better with the help of others.
So basically, at the end of the day, you started to do life differently. You literally did things different and got different results, which is, it's incredible. And I'd love you to kind of dive in a little bit before I ask you the question that we all gear up for. But what is it that you've been able to take out this to be able to help other men do life differently?
Yeah, I love it. And we call it the PCT. I'm in this course right now with these amazing, prolific keynote speakers, guys that go all over the world and talk about a variety of subjects. And what's really amazing is you can glean so much information from guys, I guess, no matter what their subject is, innovation, technology, sales, leadership. Now, I happen to stay in the lane typically of midlife men. However, the message is applicable at any age, stage, or gender that you're at. As far as my coaching goes, I stay in the lane of midlife men because that's really where I am. You know, guys approaching middle-aged guys in it and guys, you know, kind of coming out of it the other side. But what's the problem? It's the problem we're trying to solve, you know, here. How can I help men maximize middle age? Get back what matters most. Measure to the right metrics. What's my credibility? Why am I the guy to help you solve it? Here are the reasons why. Look at my life's resume overall in here. Been there, done that, succeeded, failed, failed again, succeeded a little bit, went from fat to fit to fit. Here it is. Here's me. And why am I the guy to help you solve it overall? And then the T, what's the transformation that's going to come out of this? How do you maximize your life? How do you come out of this to be the man that you want to be, to live the way that you want to? And we run through that program. And everybody's definition of success and high performance is a little bit different. How do we turn those Fs into As? And it's not about becoming a straight A student. You don't have to be. But if you're an A over here and you're an F over here, we all know what your cumulative GPA is. You're a C. Now, you don't want to be average, do you? So how do we index correctly? How do we help turn those Fs into As? How do we look at total life wellness? How do we look at what your overall scorecard is? And is it authentically built around you? I mean, I talk a lot about fashion, but it's not really about fashion. It's about style and confidence. It's not about being on the cover of GQ or Esquire or any of those things. It's really about, are you wearing things and putting things on your body that you feel good about? Do they make you feel confident? Do they make you secure? When you go to the gym, I feel genuinely stronger when I wear Roan. When I've got a kick-ass workout outfit on and it's all black and whatever, I feel better going into the gym than in my, 1992, college hockey, shirt and old sweatpants.
looking the Adam Sandler look. You don't like that?
It doesn't work for me. It works. Obviously, it works great for Sandler. It's part of his personal brand. You know? But everybody, again, it's a little different for everybody else, you know, in there. But it goes back to the concept even of your show. Own it. Hmm? Own it. We discover who you are. Discover the man you want to be, how you want to show up for yourself, how you want to show up for others. But it starts with you. You know, self-care is not selfish. There's this misconception, especially with guys, a lot of, I give so much of myself. I give so much of my, there's nothing left over for me. Flip it. It starts with you, and that's okay.
I actually say not engaging in self-care is the most selfish thing that you can do.
100%. And that's why I get actually so many calls from women. Hmm? Your wives want you to be better, guys. It's that simple. They do not want you to die at your desk, okay? They don't want to see the family vacation picture where your kids look amazing. Actually, your wife is looking good. She's working out with all your money. She's doing everything else. And you look like shit. Right? You can't get off your phone, can't get away from your office. You don't look, you're worried, you know? I mean, they want you to be better.
It's so funny because I had a, I had a big wake up call when, again, kind of going through these transformation periods myself. And all of a sudden somebody says to me, they go, Justin, you're uber talented. You're unbelievable what you do, but I'll take somebody less talented at 100% of their capacity than what you're able to produce at 60%. And the more that you give, the more that you go, the continue that you keep showing up and not replenishing the batteries, not continue to give back. I don't care how talented you are. My dad said it when I was 13. Talent gets you noticed. Consistency gets you paid. What does it look like to be the most consistent version of you? And it's not neglecting the person that's on the back end of that. And I love that whole optionality to bring it all together.
I think it all matters, man. I think it all matters. And again, we all have choices in our lives too. Again, who we work with, who we surround ourselves with, who we buy from, where we go, any of these things.
Yep.
How do you want to be perceived? How do you see yourself? How do others see you? Are you proud of the man in the mirror? You know, can you strip down, get real, get raw, get naked, get vulnerable, all that? And are you okay with what you see looking back at you?
Yeah.
And if you're not, two choices.
Option one or option two.
Yeah, exactly. Do the work or don't do the work. Better one or better two.
Yeah.
You want to live out of focus? Hmm? Blurry? You know, without direction, rudderless, looking at them? Or do you want to laser this in? Do you want clarity? Do you want consistency? That opens so much empty space. Time is like such a thing that keeps coming up too. With these, I don't have the time or I'm so busy. It's like, are you really? What if we did a couple of things here? Let's run through a couple of exercises here. Mm-hmm.
And when we often hear that, we often come back to the whole concept. It's time is not the most precious commodity. It's energy. Because when we hear about, I don't have the time, really, it's just a true onset of, I don't have the energy to do it. I don't have the mental energy. I don't have the physical energy. I don't have the energy to show up. The moment that we start managing energy.
Your time. That's what it
exactly.
is too. Exactly. You're wasting it, wasting energy, wasting time. That's what you're just applying it in the wrong areas.
Exactly.
And we can help you straighten that out a little bit. Again, totally. if you want it. Hmm?
Greg, what's your
the excuses?
Greg, what's your definition of ownership?
Oh man. Then what I said even about authenticity. I think it's about being able to do what I want, when I want, with who I want. Mm-hmm. I own who I am right now. I own what I'm all about, for better or for worse, you know, success or failure. I'm all in on this. You know, I think that there's, I genuinely believe that I can make a difference and I want to make a difference, whether it's one man, one listener, one reader, one coaching client, or hundreds of thousands out there. I genuinely believe there are incredible men out there just waiting to maximize their potential and their existence, and that we have so much more runway ahead of us than we do behind us. opportunity and possibility and probability to live better and longer and healthier and wealthier and happier and have more fun. So that's my, look, that's my definition of ownership. Get back what matters most. That's what own it means. I own it. My time, my dime, my life. Not selfish. It's really the opposite. All about giving and being of service, which creates not only return on investment, but return on life.
I love it. Greg, where can people find you? Where can they engage with you?
Yeah, that's a great question right now, because speaking of time, I'm locked out of my Instagram account. Okay. So what's amazing is I've gotten so much time back, realizing, wait a minute, okay, how actually do I use this tool and this resource and have it? And maybe this is the great reset. The number one place is go to midlifemail.com. You can find all about me there, including all my contact information. I spend a lot of time at midlifemail.com. You can subscribe to the Midlife Mail podcast. You can subscribe to the weekly newsletter, have that dropped in your inbox. You can learn all about my coaching programs, one-on-one, group, the book that's coming out. You can download my free ebook that's there, even my gift guide that's there. On Instagram, it's at Greg Scheinman. If I get it back right now, but you can find me on Instagram. I spend a lot of time there. You may be finding me at Greg Scheinman 2.0 very soon. We'll see about that. And I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn actually also, because really that's where a lot of these guys are. And when you default to work, they tend to default to LinkedIn. And I try to bring a different perspective to what I do over there.
Fantastic. So guys, it's so unique, right? We want to truly realize that potential that exists in each one of us. That's why we drive. That's why we push forward. That's why we do what we do, is not just trying to maximize the potential, but truly realize that potential. And there's a reason why the windshield is bigger than the rearview mirror, is that when we look forward, when we're able to have this level of clarity, where we were to lean in, we have the ability to say better one, better two. Better one, better two. What do we want? Better one, better two. And we have the power to make that question to ourselves and ultimately to choose to have a life by design and not by default. Not to tie our identity to what we do, but rather who we are. And when we do that, we're able to get back what truly matters most. And as Greg said, knowing what's the most important is the most important. And it takes stepping back, having a certain level of consciousness, leaning into those real life moments, valuing experiences over things, and being able to live differently. Because when you do that, you're able to live in that ownership level, which is going all in and getting back what matters most. Being able to understand that success is different, thus you need to own your different. We'll see you next week.